This podcast of Left, Right, and Center is a production of KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com. Support for KCRW podcasts comes from the Southern California Lexus dealers.
From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, this is Left, Right, and Center.
You like potato?
And you like potato?
You like tomato?
And you like tomato?
Potato?
Potato?
Tomato?
Tomato?
Amos's big win, Bush's spine, Kerry's filibuster, Oprah's lament, plus your definitive State of the Union preview. Hello again and welcome to Left, Right, and Center, your civilized yet provocative antidote to the screaming talking heads that dominate political debate. I'm Matt Miller, columnist for Fortune magazine and senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, holding down the center here on Left, Right, and Center. Joining me on the left side of our Santa Monica studio and the political spectrum is Robert Scheer, a syndicated columnist based at the San Francisco Chronicle and editor-in-chief of TruthDig.com. On the right, from Washington today, is special guest John O'Sullivan, a senior fellow at the Hudson Institute and editor-at-large of National Review. A special welcome back to you, John O'Sullivan. Always glad to have you.
Nice to be here.
And joining us also in Santa Monica from the progressive independent blogosphere is our own Arianna Huffington, editor-in-chief of the Huffington Post. A very busy week, obviously. The biggest news out of the Middle East, the stunning victory in the Palestinian elections of Hamas, sending shockwaves through the world, really, as well as the Middle East. John O'Sullivan, why don't we start with you? What do you make of this victory? What does it mean in terms of setting back any prospects on the heels of Ariel Sharon as well for Middle East peace in the near future?
Well, I think of it as actually something quite good in disguise. The disguise is, as Churchill once said, very effective, because Hamas is undoubtedly a terrorist group. But Hamas itself realizes the difficulties that this places it in, and has been trying ever since its election to get Fatah, the main, until now the leading group in the Palestinian movement, to form a coalition government with it. Because from the standpoint of Hamas and all terrorist groups, what they want is to have political allies who negotiate with governments while they themselves can plant bombs. Now, if they are the government, they know that no one's going to negotiate with them if they just carry on with a thoroughgoing terrorist campaign. So I think we now have a victory for clarity in the first instance. And the second thing is, you may have noticed, but today there have been huge demonstrations of Fatah supporters against their own leadership, saying that you lost because you were corrupt. And this is the first stage of a very difficult process. But as democracy is beginning to work in this system, even if it's working in a roundabout way.
Arianna, go ahead.
I must say, it is absolutely stunning to try now to justify, to rationalize Bush's triumphalist statements through the past few years about democracy and how a democratic country will be a more peaceful country, and that's the way to deal with terrorism, by saying that, well, as the president said, and as in a way John is saying now, this was a wake-up call to the leadership of a corrupt regime. So it is a wake-up call. So you put out the corrupt ones and you bring in the terrorists. I mean, a victory for clarity, as John put it. Listen, this is an absolute repudiation of the president's default position that we are in Iraq because by spreading democracy, we're going to be able to defeat terrorists and make America safer. What happened yesterday is an absolute repudiation of that, and it's a repudiation of his entire Iraq policy, one more time.
Doesn't it say
it's
more
not
about...
a repudiation
I don't see how it has to do with Iraq at all.
It has everything to do with Iraq.
Why does it have more to do with the frustrations of Palestinians with their own leadership and reaching out in a way that's going to end up being counterproductive to a group that's a terrorist, but has also done enormous kind of social programs, which is why they've got such popularity, right?
But the president has to explain how democracy is actually dealing with terrorism. I mean, here we have democracy, and the president kept stressing yesterday that there was a peaceful process as people went to the polls, as though this is really the issue.
Well,
actually, the president has to explain to Arianna that sometimes the voters elect people we don't like. That's just something we've got to accept.
And right. Although I admire your ingenuity in turning everything into a critique of Bush, not everything potentially is. Although, Bob, you look like it may be.
Well, first of all, I agree with just about everything that's been said. Maybe I'm the moderate now. But I think elections are a good thing. And I think it's not Arianna that needs the lecture on that, but Bush does, because he doesn't like the results of the election, for instance, in Venezuela. He's done everything he can to undermine the will of the people there. It's questionable now what he thinks about the election in Bolivia that had quite a strong anti-American, anti-corporate tinge to it. The election in Argentina and Chile put in people who rejected the U.S. model for Latin America, and we'll see to what degree we cooperate. So what we're seeing here, and certainly saw it in Iran, where the people, the most militant anti-American won an election, which was certainly as fair as the one in Iraq, and in Iraq, where the pro-Iranian Shiites and Muqtada Sadr just said in Iran the other day, and he's part of the winning coalition, that if the U.S. does anything against Iran, then Iraq will be on Iran's side. So elections have unintended consequences. Where I think Arianna is absolutely right is the neoconservatives had promised that by getting rid of Saddam Hussein, they somehow were making life better for Israel and for the region, that there would be peace. That was the fantasy. You get rid of this dictator. But he was a secular dictator. And in fact, he wasn't particularly militant on the Israeli question, and he wasn't supporting really these other groups. You get rid of him, you've now got true fanatics, both Sunni and Shiite, in play here. And I disagree with the assumption here that Hamas won just because they're less corrupt than the PLO. The main critique that Hamas enters against the PLO is the PLO is not militant enough, that they pursued this path of diplomacy, that they tried to work with Israel. And I don't think we should be so harsh on the PLO. It's difficult to educate a people that have been occupied and so forth that cooperation and peace is a better way. But I think PLO is right to do that and to negotiate with Israel. I think that should be supported. I think the dangerous thing now is that elections, even when you try to buy them, and the U.S. put money in, I gather, $2 million to help the PLO in this election. The fact is, elections are a means. They don't give you the end. They're means, you know, and they can have unexpected outcomes. They can have unfavorable outcomes. You have to respect them, but they don't solve the problem. And Bush has acted as if this is sort of the panacea for everything in the world. It isn't.
John, any last thoughts on this? Because we got a lot
Yeah, absolutely. The great thing about elections is they are self-correcting. In other words, if the Hamas government turns out to be as dreadful as most of us seem to think it will, then the people will be able to throw them out in the next election. Secondly, I think Bob is fooling himself if he thinks that we haven't had the PLO winking at terrorism until now. That's been the problem. The problem is it's been talking politics with out of one side of its mouth and out of the other side of its face, rather, it's been giving the wink to let other people carry on a campaign of terrorism. Exactly what the IRA pioneered in Northern Ireland. That is fundamentally unstable and unacceptable. And now that people of the authority have given the responsibility of government to Hamas, then we're going to force Hamas to choose between one or the other. And I don't think we can simply allow this kind of charade to go on indefinitely.
Obviously, we're going to be monitoring this in the weeks ahead. But speaking of monitoring, Bush's own domestic surveillance continued source of controversy this week. Friday's New York Times had a poll showing that most Americans, if the surveillance is linked to people who are doing suspicious activities, support it, but also many concerned about infringement of civil liberties. Alberto Gonzalez, the president's attorney general, gave a kind of intellectual defense, saying this week in a speech at Georgetown, I think it was, that there's a history of this kind of stuff in the American Republic, and there shouldn't be an overreaction from worried civil libertarians. And Bush himself had to address that at a press conference. Arianna, what do you make of where this current controversy stands and where it's headed?
Well, it's obviously going to continue for a long time. And what the president needs to deal with is the fact that many of his own Republicans, including John McCain and Alan Spector, are raising questions and are not going to be satisfied. So this is not just the Democrats, although they are trying desperately from the White House to position it as just Democrats overreacting and Democrats not caring about keeping us safe. And there is an ad that the RNC is starting today that's targeting Harry Reid, wanting to make changes to the Patriot Act. So that's all part and parcel of trying to avoid a debate, but the existence of McCain and Specter and other moderate Republicans insisting on hearings and answered questions is going to make that impossible.
I do worry about the politics of this as a Democrat, for Democrats, just because we've talked about this before. I don't like the warrantless part of it, but the idea that such a big public emphasis is going to be placed on the concern over potential infringements as opposed to the need to try and stem people who are trying to kill us, I think, is worrisome. Bob, you don't share my worries.
No, I think it's much more worrisome not to consistently defend the First Amendment and, in fact, the entire Bill of Rights and the whole idea of limited government. And clearly, that's what leadership is all about. And if the Democrats can't provide that leadership, they're part of the problem. The fact is, you can take a poll and give the wordings of the key elements of the Bill of Rights, and the voters will reject it. And even in this poll, it depends on how you word the question. If you frighten them and we're capturing the really bad guys, then they say, yeah. But then they say, should we do this against ordinary Americans? In that very same poll, it swings over just the other way. Clearly, in the protection of minority rights, one does not go to the majority in any given moment, particularly of hysteria in the middle of what is declared as a war, to worry about preserving the rights of individuals. And that's where leadership comes in. And I find it sickening that Democrats can't somehow rise to it and worry about the polls. And let me also say, by the way, the good news on the polls is that the Washington Post ABC on Friday released a poll saying 78% of Americans of all parties, bipartisan, want the White House to turn off of those photographs and contacts they had with Abramoff and on the lobbying scandal, and they will not allow the White House to hide behind its prerogatives and secrecy, and they want to see the photos of the president and Abramoff, and they want to see the documents connecting the White House to the scandal. So that's a good sign.
John?
The photographs are absolutely the opposite of a smoking gun. There'll be one of those stiff photographs that are taken automatically when someone goes to a White House reception. So,
well, then why don't they release them?
You can rest assured. Well, then maybe they're getting you up into a terrible state so that when they are released, you'll be terribly deflated, Ariana.
It's reflexive stonewalling.
They never give anything without a fight.
I have no doubt.
Now,
the
administration has made one interesting mistake, which is it didn't seek retrospective justification from the FISA courts. I think that's an unnecessary mistake, but an interesting one.
From the what courts?
And it's the only the FISA courts. We're talking not about the photographs here,
right, but
about the warrantless searches and so on. Everybody knows that all previous administrations have done this kind of thing. The administration went to political leaders and opposition parties and told them about it. There's no political danger for this for the administration. There is, as you shrewdly pointed out, political danger for the Democrats. But why didn't they go to the FISA courts? I think the answer is because the technology involved here is one that is kind of semi-automatic. And consequently, it's very hard to know it until quite late in the day that if you've come up with anything. I honestly don't think there's going to be damage to the administration in all of this, though. I think that the people who've got to worry are the Democrats.
Bob, let me ask you just before we just got a minute left before we need to break, but just a sort of a related privacy issue. Google, we hadn't talked about this, but Google just decided to essentially self-censor some of its stuff to be able to do its main website in China. And that does raise the question, and also, but then also agreed or is resisting federal subpoenas for various of, you know, the content and stuff on its website now. Why is it worrisome for, I guess the question I wanted to ask just briefly, and you're both web gurus, is why is it worrisome for the government to be capturing some stuff and not for private enterprises like Google and Yahoo and others who are accumulating, just like Truthdig and the Huffington Post, vast quantities, although Google and Yahoo may be edging you out right now, but vast quantities of information about our behavior?
Well, first of all, because I don't approve of a private collection of all this data, and I think there should be restrictions on it. But let me just say, there's a big difference between a private company that we can sue, that hopefully there will be whistleblowers step forward, that we can hold accountable, and a government that could sweep in, as they did in this case. And Yahoo and AOL, Time Warner's AOL, weren't even going to tell us about it, and and Microsoft, but Google objected. So they deserve good points, which I mentioned in Truth Dig and the San Francisco Chronicle this week. I wrote an editorial praising them. On your second point, so there's a big difference between a government being in and say, we want to know every single search. This is what they requested. Every single search done by anybody using the internet for a solid week, where they went, where they went. To, and then the big defense is they didn't connect the addresses of individuals, but that would be, I suspect, the next crest. Now, having praised Google, let me damn them, because the thing with China shows these multinational corporations are really out to make money, and they don't care about freedom, even the freedom of the marketplace. And what Google is doing in China is wrong.
Well, we should revisit all that, because the other argument is that by engaging with them, it's better for the Chinese people and the exposure. This is the whole debate over whether sort of constructive engagement with China, which is essentially becoming corporate policy for Google, is actually better in the long term for the goals we probably all share. But we're going to have to come back to that. Up ahead, is Alito in? Is Oprah sorry? You're listening to Left, Right, and Center.
Find more Left, Right, and Center programs and podcasts at kcrw.com.
Back again with Left, Right, and Center. I'm Matt Miller in the center. Robert Scheer is with me on the left. Special guest John O'Sullivan is in Washington on the right. Arianna Huffington, also here in Santa Monica and somewhere beyond. What if John Kerry gave a filibuster and nobody came? He's talking about filibustering Alito. It looks as though there's virtually no chance of that happening. John O'Sullivan, is this just posturing? Is this a stand of principle? Is Alito stoppable?
I suppose he is in theory.
One word answers are fine.
Okay. It's possible, but very unlikely. The thing, surely, about this is it's basically the Democratic senators being bent to the wishes of their more extreme supporters in the country. They're going to look foolish. And if I were the Republicans, one of the things I'd make them do is stick to the old rules for filibusters, which is to say you've just got to stand there and keep talking. You can't have breaks. You can't have coffee breaks. You can't have your place taken by someone else. You've just got to keep talking and talking and talking.
Bob?
Yeah, well, you know, first, it's an honorable tradition.
Speaking of men who could filibuster if needed.
For a worthy cause, I would. Others might do it for any cause. But I think going back to Mrs. Smith Goes to Washington, it's an honorable tradition that's been celebrated. I want to say the reason Kerry may be doing this, the reason Democrats may have found some spine on this, is because of internet outlets like BuzzFlash, Truthout, The Nation, Huffington Post, and so forth, which asked, where are the Democrats on this? Why aren't they speaking out? I don't think it was some kind of calculation, nor do I think this is some sort of deranged base. These are the people who care about getting out the vote. These are the people who make contributions. And these websites are in touch with millions of people, Move On organization and so forth. And so, you know, just like Bush doesn't run away from every Christian activist, you can hardly describe all the people who care about the threat posed by Alito as deranged. And they're demanding the party stand up and show some backbone. And hopefully Kerry will do that.
Arianna?
It's also really good practice. You know, whatever happens, it's going to be really good for Democratic leaders to begin to exercise those muscles. But the numbers are not good. The numbers are at the moment that those supporting the filibuster have about 35 people, and therefore that means that the 60 needed, the 60 votes needed to break the filibuster are there at the moment.
Okay, we'll be watching that. Lots of people were watching Oprah Winfrey this week when she had James Frey, whose memoir of his drug addiction, I guess, and his ordeal had been touted by her book club, leading to millions in book sales. It turns out that a lot of it was fictional, and she called him on the carpet in what became a big cultural moment enough to grace page one of the New York Times, where she called him a liar, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And he confessed, I guess, but I don't think he's giving back the money from the millions of books he sold. What does this all mean, Arianna?
Well, first of all, the first instinct that Oprah had was to defend him. Remember, it was to go on Larry King and say, well, so what's the big deal? You know, so it wasn't true, but there was emotional truth, and completely stand by him. So again, Oprah very shrewdly responded to pressure. Again, it was the pressure, it was the disgust expressed by people who wanted to make a distinction between truth and emotional truth that actually drove her to do what was the right thing for the opera brand. The right thing for the opera brand is to sit there and say, I made a mistake, I was betrayed, which is what she said, and go back on what her instinctive response was on the Larry King show, which is to defend him.
You know, one other thing that interests me in this is that it really exposes, and all of us who are authors here know this is true, but the lack of fact-checking in publishing, because she apparently, I don't know if Nan Talese, who's the publisher, was on the show.
She was.
But she said, didn't you check this? And she go, well, no, you know, it goes through legal for libel reviews and stuff, but publishers, my experience is publishers at this point barely have editors.
Yeah.
They can barely edit the
FBI
books,
department.
Let alone, right. So the idea that they would actually try and find out what was in it, and that actually may change now because of something like this, at least when people are saying what are supposedly big true life stories that publishers are going to put a lot of marketing muscle behind. There's going to be a new look at some of this stuff, Bob, and I know you'll say none too soon as a man who's pro-fact.
I'll say we should be careful.
Although you've always had a lot of emotional truth yourself,
Bob. Be careful
Bob.
About assuming, I don't know what that means, but should be careful about assuming that people who work in other venues have not committed this problem. And I remember Michael Parks, the editor, former editor of the Los Angeles Times, when I asked him, how did the New York Times, James Risen, who's now celebrated with his new book and so forth, I said, how did they get into savaging Wenho Lee, a scientist at Los Alamos, who ended up spending 9 months in solitary, and the judge in the case ended up apologizing? Why did the New York Times destroy this man, use lies leaked by a congressional committee out to get him and so forth? And Michael Parks said, too good to check. And what he meant was, now he wasn't speaking for himself, he was speaking for what had happened to the paper, New York Times, but he meant it generally for the industry, too good to check. They want to make money, they want to have sales, they want to, you know, be stars. Why did the New York Times run Judy Miller story? So the real scandal here is not this particular book. The real scandal is you want to make money and you want to get your name out there and you really don't care about digging for the truth, Matt, digging for the truth.
There's a wider scandal here, surely, and that is that the market, the rest of us, society, had been very tolerant towards previous such cases, the most famous one being, of course, the Nobel Prize winner, Rigoberta Menchú, who had made up the life story for which she received the prize. And when that was revealed, there was very, very little response. There was very little condemnation. People said, well, they use the emotional truth defense. An emotional truth, plainly, is simply a synonym for fiction. It's if something happened, it happened. If it didn't happen, it didn't happen. So you can't excuse that kind of thing. And yet
John,
we have again
I'm,
and again.
I'm ignorant. What was the? Who was that Nobel person? And what did?
Well, it's funny you've forgotten, but it was a big story for a while. Rigoberta Menchú. She was, I think, a Venezuelan, and she told a tale, a very tragic and awful tale, about how her family had been massacred and so on and so forth, and it turned out to be largely untrue, but it was politically appealing, and so she was given the prize. But when the truth was revealed, she herself, there was lots of excuses made of the kind which were not made on this occasion, which is why it's an important occasion.
Well, let's obviously we're all for more truth in the future, even next week when President Bush gives his State of the Union, another flimsy segue, courtesy of Left, Right, and Center. We've only got a few minutes, but Arianna, what are you looking for? What do you want him to do? What does he need to do? Tom Friedman had an interesting column in Friday's New York Times, continuing on the crusade that Friedman's been doing terrifically, I think, on energy policy and the kind of speech he wishes Bush would give, calling on for serious energy independence and big gas taxes and all this stuff. I think it's unlikely. That's what we're going to hear from George Bush. We're going to hear a lot about health savings accounts, I guess. He's going to be talking about health care in a way to, I guess, cover his domestic flank for the lack of domestic achievements. But I said that in a fair and balanced way. What do you expect?
I expect nothing, and I'm not going to be disappointed, but there's no question there is something very interesting happening in what you described, that the White House somehow recognizes that there is no way they can indefinitely continue spinning Iraq as a success and their war on terror as a success, although they will keep trying, and therefore they want to improve their standing on the domestic issues. That's why there's such an emphasis in this State of the Union, apparently, on health care, which is very interesting in terms of where the Democrats should be in their response, even though, unfortunately, they've gotten this governor, the new governor of Virginia, to give it, they should be absolutely on their war on terror and pointing out the administration's disasters there instead of taking the bait and also moving primarily to domestic issues.
John, briefly, what do you expect?
I hope the president follows. I hope the Democrats follow Arianna's advice, because that will focus attention on national security, which is a good issue for the Republicans. I think that the reason that the president will talk about health care is very sensible. Namely, people are worried about it. It's a big problem. It's unsolved. He better get in his solution before the Democrats do. And I think it's quite a good solution.
Bob?
You mentioned Tom Friedman. George Bush will not do, and any more than Tom Friedman will do, the thing that needed is to admit where you went wrong. Tom Friedman supported the Iraq War, a stupid waste of our resources. He said there were weapons of mass destruction. Then he said he didn't care because Saddam Hussein himself was a weapon. He plays with these ideas, and now he tells us we should be worried about energy when the whole energy supply has been disrupted by this war. The same problem with George Bush. They cannot admit they made a mistake. And you know what? That strategy of don't explain, don't justify, and so forth, it turns out to work for them, at least in the short run. They're both successful, Tom Friedman and George Bush, even though they were both dreadfully wrong.
We have reached that time once again for our famed end of show, Left, Right, and Center Rant, featuring pet peeves from across the ideological spectrum. Just about 20 seconds each. Special guest John O'Sullivan, it is your soapbox.
Very simple one. I'm sorry that we haven't heard more about this important new biography of Mao, Mao Zedong by Yang Chang and John Holliday. It shows that Mao was the biggest mass murderer of the 20th century, somebody who was revered by many people on the left and in Hollywood 20 years ago, has had not simply feet but thighs, chest, and head of clay. It should be given more attention.
Arianna Huffington.
I just want to highly recommend a new documentary called Why We Fight, directed by Eugene Jarecki, and looking into the whole American military-industrial complex, including the coining of that phrase by Eisenhower. It's really powerful, with great interviews and great stories.
Robert Scheer.
Yes, I just want to pick up on John's point about Mao. The people who celebrated Mao and made a peace with him was Richard Nixon and Henry Kissinger. They went to Beijing. They had toasts with Mao, and they worked out an accommodation for the future of the world. At the same time, they were killing millions of people in Vietnam who were the wrong kind of communists. The Chinese communists were the right ones when Mao was still in power. So the idea that somehow the left didn't understand Mao, when it was the Republicans or Richard Nixon who embraced Mao and made a whole world accommodation while they continue to kill people in other parts of the world, it seems to me astounding. Maybe the Republicans should read that book.
Looking at health care and the fact that Bush is going to put this front and center in the State of the Union, a couple political thoughts and substantive thoughts. First, I think he's doing this because the Republicans rightly understand that the domestic agenda as we head into the 06 elections and to the 08 presidential election, that health care is going to be the central domestic issue. And if Iraq ever settles down, it could be the central issue in the whole campaign. Bush is going to try and lay out the language and approaches that will be useful for Republicans this fall. It's going to set up, unfortunately, this classic debate, which is a totally false choice between let the markets prevail in health care and let the government do it, which any serious observer of our health care system knows we need a blend of both. You want to harness market forces for the innovation they can provide, but you don't want to do the kind of shifting of costs to, especially to low-income workers who can't bear it, which a lot of what the president's agenda is. That's what he needs to learn on the Democratic side, however. The idea that only government can solve the problems that ail health care is wrong. There's going to need to be a bigger government role, but we've got to try to find a way to bring some consumer power to bear as well. That's all the nuance we have time for today on Left, Right, and Center. Thanks, as always, to Bob Scheer, Arianna Huffington, and special guest John O'Sullivan of the National Review. Sarah Spitz produced today's program. Our technical director is J.C. Swadek. I'm Matt Miller. Thanks for listening. Tune in again next week for more Left, Right, and Center.
If you like pajamas, I wear pajamas.
You got pajamas.
Well, we
know we need each other, so we better call the calling of all.
Audio archives and podcasts of KCRW programs are at kcrw.com. For questions and comments about Left, Right, and Center, email lrc@kcrw.com. Left, Right, and Center is produced and distributed by 89.9 KCRW Santa Monica and kcrw.com.
You've been listening to KCRW's Left, Right, and Center. KCRW offers more than 20 podcasts, including Le Show, a weekly romp through the worlds of media, politics, sports, and show business with satirist Harry Shearer. Check out the podcast of Le Show at kcrw.com.